Right, I am doing this one a little bit early for a change because I have been rather late lately, and frankly, I'd like to get this one up and running as soon as possible, partly because the bandwidth here, I reckon it's going to take about a day to get the thing uploaded. Last time I came and did this update, I was in Geneva. Now, I'm going to talk about Geneva in a moment because I went to CERN, and CERN was absolutely freaking amazing. Just to sort of put things in context about what happened between CERN and where I am now, which I'll talk about in a moment, I went to Bern after CERN. So, excuse me, I'm also getting sick as well because it's run down, which you might be able to hear. I'm trying to take as much medicine as I can for it because I figure it might help. But seriously, I think I've deserved a glass of wine this week. Where did I go? I went to Bern. So went to Bern, did a few things there, a little bit government related, which was really nice stuff that will hopefully be things that I can talk about at a later date. But that was a really good trip there. Went from Bern to here, which is Bellagio in Italy. And that was actually a nice convenient drive. And I've come here not to do more cyber, but to actually have a bit of a break. So my parents have been holidaying here, and it timed in with the end of all my Europe travels, so I'm going to spend a bit of time with them here and then actually get on the same plane as my mum and dad and go home to Australia, which is actually a really, really nice thought because it kind of sucks travelling on your own as well. So this is pretty much intended to be downtime. If you're not actually watching the video, I'm sitting in like this little, it's a terrace in an Airbnb, but it all looks very Italian, surprisingly enough. You'll probably hear some Italians arguing in the background soon enough because that seems to be what happens when I sit here on the terrace and try to do stuff. But it's an absolutely stunning place, and I think I'm probably getting a little bit sick because it is just that, you know, that thing where it's like you start to slow down and then everything catches up with you. So we'll see how that works out. Nothing major yet. Now, let me go back to CERN because CERN was super, super cool. So I had an invite to speak at CERN quite some time ago where they said, look, can you come and just do a talk about the things that you do? Now, this was just a very sort of casual invite, casual chat, and I always sort of keep a list of these. Every single thing I get invited to, I keep a list, even if I don't go. That list so far for this year is well into triple digits as well, so it gives you a bit of an idea of how big this thing gets. So anyway, I had the invite from CERN, and then it tied in with other events I was doing in Europe. So I thought, look, I've got to go along because CERN is significant for two big things, in my book at least. One is that it's the birthplace of the World Wide Web, and two is that they've got the Large Hadron Collider. And I got to see both of these and much, much more stuff. Now, I'll link to it in the references on this video or the blog post that goes with it when I put it up. But I put a Facebook post up with a bunch of photos and some overview. And the place is just insane. It was amazing. It was everything from, you go into CERN. CERN is not a Swiss organization. It's just meant to be sort of country agnostic. It straddles the border of France and Switzerland. So it's like you're walking around, and my guide's like, now you're in Switzerland, now you're in France, now you're in Switzerland, now you're in France. Which for me as an Australian is really amazing because we don't border anything and not even close to anything. So that was pretty cool. Like, I kept opening up Google Maps and looking at the border and going on this side and on that side. So that was, for me, that was fun. But the things of most significance was the science involved and the research they do. And I will preface this by saying I understand just about none of it because it is really amazing stuff. Now, CERN came about after World War II. There'd obviously been a lot of destruction in Europe. A lot of the scientific brains and facilities, etc., were no longer there. It was no longer sort of a hub of human invention and curiosity and everything else. So CERN sort of sprung out of World War II. And they started building things like particle accelerators. Like, how do we make particles fly as fast as possible, and then we either smash them into each other or smash them into stationary objects, and then we just measure the result and see what happens, see what we can learn. Now, beyond that, I understand very little about what they actually learn. But it was kind of amazing to see things like there's an antimatter factory. Still not entirely sure what antimatter is, but it's just really freaking cool to see like a factory with a sign on the front of it which actually says antimatter factory. So we went there, saw some of the really early colliders and things that were there. And again, I sort of got this guide who took me around with a couple of other guys. So we went from there. And I'll do this in a little bit reverse order because I want to speak about the World Wide Web stuff later. Went and saw the Large Hadron Collider, and that was man, that was absolutely amazing. And you'll get a bit of a sense of it from the photos in this Facebook post. But if you ever, like, go out and Google LHC, Large Hadron Collider, it's just absolutely insane. So it's like a 27-kilometre ring, first of all, goes under the mountains in Switzerland and the other place, France. It's built into the rock because the rock doesn't move as much as soil and things like that. It accelerates particles up to almost the speed of light, which means that 27-kilometre ring, it can do 11,000 circuits of a second. 11,000 circuits of 27 kilometres every second. And just the scale of it when you walk in there, it is just absolutely freaking amazing to see. And the thing that really got me when I was looking at it is, like, how do you debug this? You know, like, where do you even start? Like, if something doesn't work, and I'm sure clever scientists figure this stuff out, but just the amount of cables and hoses and valves and gauges and the sheer scale was absolutely amazing. So that was super cool. It was currently under maintenance, which is why I could actually go down there and see it. So obviously when they run it, you can't be in there. There's all sorts of magnetic fields and things like that. My host had what I believe was effectively a Geiger counter around his neck. So as we walked around, you know, the thing every now and then would beep. He's like, "Ah, it's not fine. We're not going to get radiated just yet." So anyway, all that was amazing. I also went and saw the actual birthplace of the World Wide Web. So there is a gold plaque, and I took a photo of this and put it on my Facebook post as well. Gold plaque talking about Tim Berners-Lee, 1989, like this is the office. And then there's an office in there. It's got another guy's gear in it now. It looks just like a normal office. And a whiteboard just full of notes and things. And that was really poignant. So, you know, 1989, birth year of the web, 1990, I think it was, Berners-Lee put out like the first web browser. And I went and saw these offices, and then I went like a few doors down and I did a presentation about Have I Been Pwned. Now, I didn't say it in the talk, but I did have a moment there. I was like, I wonder if Berners-Lee ever saw it coming to this. It's like, let's make this beautiful World Wide Web, and then other people just come along and keep breaking it and leaking all their data everywhere. So it was just a really fascinating feeling. I think I mentioned in the video last week of places I've spoken or events that I've done. This, in my mind, was going to be getting up there towards sort of US congressional testimony in terms of significance. Now, look, it was a small auditorium. I had, I don't know, maybe like 100 people in there. I've done keynotes to thousands before. So from a scale perspective, it wasn't anything new. But the significance of being at CERN, the birthplace of the World Wide Web, you're doing a presentation that super smart technical people and physicists come to hear me talk about something was just insane. And I gave out a heap of Have I Been Pwned stickers too. So I love Have I Been Pwned at CERN as well. And funny too, like when I asked the question, has anyone here used Have I Been Pwned before? It's like everyone was like, yep. So yeah, the places this thing has taken me. Unbelievable stuff. Now, other things from this week. One of the things I've realised, and I should have done this last week, and I missed the birthday, was that I just passed the 10-year anniversary of me blogging. So I wrote my first blog post on the 27th of September 2009. And, gee, where do I even begin with that? I was in a job that I was increasingly disliking at the time. And certainly by the end of it, I hated the place. I stuck it out until the time made sense to go, most notably because they decided to make mine and a few other roles redundant, which is the best way to go at any time. But it was a place that I was starting to become dissatisfied with. And as many of you know, this was Pfizer Pharmaceuticals. Look, it's a big corporate that doesn't do technology, and technology is a supporting role, and all the sorts of problems that come with that were the things that I had to deal with. And I started blogging because a mate of mine there was blogging. And he was like, you know, you should start writing a blog. And I had to find my way with what made sense. And it took about a year until I really started doing the InfoSec stuff. But the first blog post was titled, Why Online Identities Are Smart Career Moves. Now, I wrote this because at the time, I'd been interviewing people for roles. And I'd get someone apply for a job, and they'd send you a CV, and you'd read the CV, and you wouldn't believe it, but every single one of them said they're awesome, right? Because this is what CVs do. It's people going, hey, have a look at my CV. You know, I guess today we'd call it like a 10X developer or a rockstar developer or something like this. Like, everyone was awesome because this is what CVs are. CVs are very self-promotional. And I kind of read it and go, yeah, you say you are, but are you as awesome as you say you are? And then I'd go, I've got references. Call my references. And I go, these are people you choose, right? You know, like people who you know are going to give you good feedback. So how is this helping any sort of objectivity on my behalf in terms of choosing, you know, who to ultimately hire? And the thing that I was finding is that as soon as I scraped the surface and I tried to find more about this person from just a purely objective, independent capacity, they were ghosts. And what do I mean by this? No Stack Overflow profile. So, okay, well, you're not out there and, you know, the world's largest, and I think it's by then was the world's largest Q&A site. You're not asking questions, not answering questions, not doing anything there. Do you have an account anywhere where you're on a forum where I can even see the sorts of things you're asking? Do you have any code in public source control repositories? Have you ever done a talk? Now, to be clear as well, I'm not expecting people out there to, you know, all want to go out and do presentations and things like this. But the thing I was getting to is that it was really, really hard to get any sort of independent gauge of someone's competency. And then I started to look at myself and I went, well, what have I got? I had been on Stack Overflow at the time. I was answering a bunch of questions. I was very active answering questions for a while there. But if I was to go and get a new job or want to get a new job, what would people actually see of me? And I remember in here, there's a sentence here that I remember quite clearly. I said, I don't know if I'm still going to be as enamored with my job or my employer as enamored with me in 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, whatever. It takes a lot of time to build a public identity. And waiting until you actually need one is just not going to work. So my view of it was that building an online identity and some sort of a profile wasn't necessarily saying I want to quit my job today. I was starting to feel that way, but regardless, it is proactive career building. So I thought, okay, I'm going to go and start to do this. And there's a funny statement I made in here. This is in the opening paragraph. And it's funny only because of something that happened a few years ago. I said, I don't necessarily mean to try and achieve semi-celebrity status like Scott Guthrie or Joel Spolsky. Arguing Italians? Maybe. Someone speaks Italian, tell me if they're arguing or not. So anyway, I'm in here saying, look, I don't want to achieve a status like Scott Guthrie or Joel Spolsky. Rather, to be able to illustrate that over time you've been actively involved in the areas in which you profess to have expertise. Now, the funny thing about it is in 2015, 2016, I keynoted at Pluralsight Live on the same stage as Scott Guthrie and Joel Spolsky. And I sort of had this moment where I was like, this has almost come full circle where the prophecy was true. You know, where I was like, look, these guys I see up there. And I had no intention whatsoever of myself being there at the time. But that's ultimately what happened. So I sort of went from September 2009 with this one blog post to gradually finding my voice and finding my voice resonating with people every time I spoke about security. You know, security was just one of many things I did at the time. I had this architect hat, which still is a funny term, but it just means you do a bunch of different stuff. And I sort of started finding that voice, and then I got the MVP award in 2011, and I thought, I probably should start doing talks, and I started to do talks. TroyHunter.com/recorded-talks, you'll see the very first talk I ever did at SSW, probably back in 2011, 2012. And it just rolled and rolled. And then I started to have a Ben Pone, and I started more international talks and all the Pluralsight courses. And everything just rolled from this first blog post. And, you know, I'm sitting here in Italy now after having spoken at CERN, you know, because I wrote this blog post and it's taken me all these places, which is fascinating. And just in case anyone, like, hasn't been watching this for a while or tunes in and went, well, like, this, it feels like, yeah, Troy came out of nowhere and suddenly this is the life. It's like, well, this is a decade later. Like, this is a decade of just about every single night, weekend, holiday, just grinding at doing this stuff. And I want to talk more about this later on. I think there's some really interesting stories that have emerged, particularly out of things like Have I Been Pwned and this merger and acquisition process, which is going along very well, by the way. I haven't forgotten to talk about it. I just got to wait till the right time to talk in more detail. So I think there's some really interesting stories I'll be able to tell out of that. But yeah, 10 years. Amazing stuff. Now, there was that. There was something else I put on my list here. Really interesting story I saw today whilst I'm still on the Have I Been Pwned thing. And I knew this was coming because I did some interviews with the reporter. But this story, I'm going to actually open up the link I put here in my notes, is about the FCC in the US, the net neutrality bill and the repealing of the net neutrality bill and the incident, shall we call it, a couple of years ago where US people were asked to leave comments on how they felt about repealing the bill. Now, as a quick recap, certainly most technical people are all for net neutrality, about not having any bandwidth prioritized over any bandwidth, not paying at an ISP level in order to route your traffic to different places. It's the internet, the stuff that I saw the other day in CERN, like the whole genesis of this, the idea of this was to be a freely, openly accessible internet for all without prioritization of different services and things like this. I think if Berners-Lee was to look at the way that net neutrality thing went today, he'd probably not be so happy with it. Anyway, here's the interesting thing. There were a huge number of comments left. Comments, I'm air quoting this now. Actually, they were comments, but the legitimacy of the people leaving the comments, the negative comments about net neutrality, was very quickly called into question because there are a huge number of comments left by people supporting the rollback of net neutrality and effectively ISPs being able to prioritize and charge for traffic and all this sort of thing. And what started to happen is as, particularly as reporters and researchers started to dig into the comments, they found a huge number of the comments appeared to be fraudulent. Now, one of the things that I learned during this process is that apparently when a US citizen, resident, whatever the criteria is, leaves a comment on a government bill, they have to leave their name, their real address, and of course the comments themselves, and I believe their email address as well, and it has to go under public ledger. And I was actually really surprised by this because I was like, so this is just like a massive data breach by design. All this stuff goes into there. But what it means is that researchers were able to take that data to be able to look at the comments which they believed were fraudulent. And this article, it's a BuzzFeed article, it's quite fascinating. This BuzzFeed article actually explains that there were patterns that were readily identifiable across the negative comments. And what someone's done here, this reporter, is he's managed to take a whole bunch of the fraudulent comments, take the email addresses, throw them against Have I Been Pwned, and come back with a surprisingly high hit rate of individuals that had been in a data breach called Modern Business Solutions. Now, I'm actually going to open up my description of the Modern Business Solutions data breach because off the top of my head, it was another data aggregator. It's like half a glass of wine. Data aggregator. So, data aggregators operate pretty much exactly however the hell they want, just by siphoning up everyone's data and selling it. Here's the description of the MBS data breach. In October, and this is data that I loaded in October 2016. Now, these FCC comments were the following year, in 2017. In October 2016, a large MongoDB file containing tens of millions of accounts was shared publicly on Twitter. So, it's the first key there. This is publicly available. Anyone watching Twitter, you know, or following the links, would be able to download all this data. The database contained over 58 million unique email addresses, along with IP addresses, names, home addresses, genders, job titles, dates of birth, and phone numbers, i.e. everything that you need to go and comment on a government bill. The data was subsequently attributed to Modern Business Solutions, a company that provides data storage and hosting solutions. They've yet to acknowledge the incident or explain how they came to be in possession of the data. Now, from memory, they pretty much disappeared. And there's a story here on Softpedia, but MBS, as I understand it, is just completely gone. But it was really interesting to see how Have I Been Pwned was used to trace down the origins of this incident. And certainly this reporter is not the first person who popped up and said, hey, you know, we believe that Have I Been Pwned has got information that can sort of help identify the source. And I thought it was kind of funny when he did pop up. I was like, oh, well, okay, someone else asking the same question now. So inevitably, they went and got an API key, did a bunch of searching, and here we go. I've just actually noticed on here, the Softpedia story says, responsible for the data breach is a hacker that goes on Twitter as OX2Taylor. Now, actually, he dumped a whole bunch of other data as well. One of the ones that I really remember is RegPack. And RegPack was a whole bunch of credit card data, 300-something thousand records from memory. And that was full credit card data, full account number, full CVV, expiry date, the whole lot. Now, I remember that one. It was an absolute debacle. And I actually had to go back and contact Have I Been Pwned subscribers who were in the RegPack's breach and say, look, just so I can be really, really sure, is like, this your CVV? In fact, I didn't say this is your CVV. I said, does your CVV end with fragment seeker 7? If yes, could you please confirm the first digit? And everything matched up. And yeah, that was a mess. So guy had been busy. So anyway, that was the FCC stuff. I thought that was fascinating. I really love seeing positive use cases. I think it's fair to say positive use case because it did sort of help track down the source of this. Positive use cases that have been pwned after something bad has happened. And maybe that's a good note to wrap up on before I do the sponsor bit. You know, I've always said with Have I Been Pwned, I wanted it to be a service that helps people do good things after a bad thing has happened. So, namely, after a data breach has happened. So, I was very happy to see that. Last thing, brand new sponsor this week, Collide. Collide is a user-focused security app for teams that care about the trust and privacy of their users. Now, they've got a free 30-day trial kicking off now. I am trying to encourage blog sponsors to give something away to people so you can actually go and have a play with it. So please check out Collide and thank them for supporting me, and you'll see more of Collide in the future as well. So big thanks to those guys. So that is it from Italy. In fact, that's it from Europe, because next week I will be doing this again from Australia. So that's going to come around really soon. And then the other thing's going to come around really soon is I'll be in Sydney the week after that doing NDC Sydney. And I've got spots still left in my workshop too. So I have a two-day workshop coming up. If I look at the events list on the side of my page, on the 14th and the 15th of October in Sydney. So if you're down Sydney way, come along to that workshop. That'd be awesome. Definitely come along to the NDC conference. I'll talk more about that next week when I come to you from the Gold Coast. Thanks for watching.